You are listening to Expanding Horizons, the podcast of the Unitarian Church of South Australia, a home of progressive spirituality and free religious thought and action since 1854. Views expressed in these podcasts are those of the speaker and are not intended to represent the position of the church itself or of the worldwide Unitarian Universalist movement. For more information, visit unitariansa.org.au. All the world's religions tend to broadly agree to a few simple matters of the human heart. The Golden Rule, for instance, is well known to appear as a core ethic in every religion, a simple directive on how we might best live, and therefore how we ought to live. But less well known is that most world religions also agree that forgiveness is a crucial way to do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Now, whether the Golden Rule is a divine direction from above, pointing the way to an earthly heaven, or just humanity's bumbling discovery through ages of bitter experience that there is a better way for us to be with each other, world religions speak with one voice about the absolute moral necessity of a simple matter of the heart, forgiveness. But just because something is simple doesn't mean there's nothing to understand, or that simple means easy. You don't have to be religious to practice forgiveness, of course, but if you practice forgiveness, you're being religious in the deepest sense of the word. Religare, to bind up again. But forgiveness is not a common habit, and perhaps those folks who are simply allergic to religion in general are allergic largely because of this annoying prime directive of being proactive in forgiving those who hurt you. Why? Because forgiving injury is so damned hard, it seems unnatural. It goes against our bestial reflexes that program us to react to hurt by fighting to dominate or by fleeing to lick the wounds and brood on the scars. It also goes against our innate sense of natural justice that tells us people should pay for the wrong that they do us. So does religion just ask too much of us? Can forgiveness really be a choice? And if so, why does it seem so against our nature? And why does all religious wisdom perversely urge it as necessary? Is it really in our power to engineer it? It will help anchor this talk if you have someone firmly in mind. You know who it is, the one whom you still struggle to forgive. Think of someone who has hurt you badly. Have you let go of all the bitterness, anger, and resentment you carry toward them? And look, I struggle with forgiveness just as much as everyone, and in some cases, progress has been marked not in months or years, but in decades. They say confession is good for the soul, so let me share a rather personal story, not as fatal as Helen Prejean's story of Dead Man Walking, but it sure felt like death and murder at the time. In May 1990, while I was a fledgling teacher in the UK, my then wife just left me one day, quite without any warning, and left me with our 3-year-old daughter. Left us for the first English guy who was nice to her. I was left to raise the child alone in a foreign country, with only the thinnest of professional networks and no family, long before there was anything like single father support groups. I remember feeling terror, humiliation, powerlessness, rage, despair, and a burst of fierce protective love for my small daughter, so helpless, so innocent, so unaware of the dark betrayals of the grown-up world. This burst of love was clarifying, though, as the dreamy horizons of my life suddenly narrowed to the necessary confines of her infant needs. I remember being out in the garden one night on a late summer evening as it closed in and my little girl was sleeping peacefully in her room above, my heart melting with pity at what her life was to be with me alone to look after her, and suddenly something hit me so hard it nearly knocked me down. Call it a gift of grace or an epiphany, there was stone-cold karma in this fix I was in, because 10 years earlier, I had hurt someone else's innocent girl child badly when I unceremoniously dumped my first real girlfriend. That was the first serious relationship for both of us and spanned most of our university years. This lovely young woman had never done anything to me injurious, not ever. But I created a wound that I know for a fact has never really healed to this day. She never got over it. And that was nearly 40 years ago. As badly as I did to her, worse was done to me 10 years later. Worse and yet better because of the added karmic twist, having a small, innocent girl child to love and shape, and thus an opportunity to undo the sort of heartlessness in me that had so wounded somebody else's tender little girl child a decade before. "Oh," I remember saying. "Oh, okay. Okay." Shaking my fist at heaven. "I get it. Karma. Do we invite or provoke our own destinies? Do we indeed reap what we sow? If so, to quote Helen Prejean's story, forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us." That daughter is now 31, and is far more well-adjusted than I have any right to expect. Raising her taught me, long after I was certainly old enough to know, what love actually was, and how transformative is the power of being loving, that it really does repair the fractured heart, and thus helps us to forgive those who hurt us. It taught me that being hurt by someone is not the worst thing that can happen to us. Far worse would be a life sentence in the prison of anger and resentment and bitterness, the fruits of being unforgiving. Mending a broken heart is not just for the childhood, of course. You can mend your broken heart your own self, even if you don't have a child of your own to show you how. How might you work on a parole from this life sentence? Well, I've thought a lot about this over the decades, and I can see no practical alternative to forgiveness as a practice. And what else do you do? Seethe, rage forever? Or keep the hurt and anger and hatred locked away and take them out and relish them in the wee hours, savoring their bitter taste? Do you really want that flinching reflex every time anything, a street, a song, the face of a child, reminds you of the one who hurt you? Would you really never want to trust anyone fully ever again? Folk wisdom has it that held on to resentments and bitterness turn into tumors. I don't know about that. But I do know it is magical thinking to hope that all the scented baths, incense, chanting, yoga classes, and elaborate distraction in the world is going to chase heartbreak and its lingering bitterness completely out of your being, like some sort of exorcism. In the end, the only person who suffers from you holding on to the hurt is you. So forgiveness is a kind of enlightened self-interest. It's not magic either. Forgiveness is not going to give you a better past. A better past is metaphysically impossible anyway. And I know that in the lingo of New Age self-help, people talk about healing, but my experience is that no one ever actually erases past hurts miraculously, even when we forgive. What has been must ever be, and nothing undoes what's been. In a very real way, hearts do stay broken. As with a broken vase, even if you put it back together so that it holds water and flowers, it's still a broken vase. Heartbreak's always going to leave a mark. Hearts can't be healed like new, but they can be mended, stitched, reassembled, patched, and painted, but never unbroken. They can knit back together like bone tissue, but also like bone tissue. An X-ray always shows the old breaks, clear as day. Broken bones, of course, can be left to nature with only a slight intervention to set them properly, but you wouldn't want to leave the mending of broken hearts to human nature with our 2-million-year-old fight-or-flight reflex as well as our unconquerable facility for denial. Broken hearts require you practice forgiveness, and it is not an app, but a craft. It's hard, daily, do-it-yourself labor. Forgiveness is not given to us in our human nature, but has to be acquired and can only be acquired through practice. The call of religion to forgiveness is therefore no less than a call to evolve our own nature, to transform ourselves from reactive beasts caged by reflex into something more free, more fully human, possibly even divine. Forgiveness can't give you a better past, no, but it can offer a freer future. There is a transformative moment in the Christian story when Jesus, at the extreme of his suffering, says to the people who have betrayed him, beat him half to death, and nailed him to a piece of wood with 9-penny nails. He says, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do." I refer to this because while the irksome Galilean prophet spent much of his time preaching forgiveness and modeling it, he never said it was going to be easy. When asked how much we should forgive injuries, he said, not 7 times, but 70 times 7. Now, 7 was the Jewish number for totality, so by 70 times 7, I think he meant infinitely. It's easy to talk that talk. It's much harder to walk that walk, particularly when they've nailed your feet to a stump. But Jesus enjoins us to forgive and models it. He doesn't tell us how to engineer that change of heart. So what can you do to engineer this renovation, to put your heart back together into some sort of open, loving, working order? What are the mechanics of forgiveness? Well, my father used to say, a varied toolkit is a good toolkit. So here are a few practical tools gathered from several traditions and pastoral sources. First, work to comprehend the motives of the person who hurt you. This means acknowledging that few people are actually intentionally malicious, who actually undertake to injure others, who get up in the morning and say, "Who shall I hurt today?" but instead behave, as we all do, from complex motives and compulsions. The golden rule might be adapted to love thy neighbor, for he is as complex and screwed up as thyself. Second, see your own role in the injury. Two people are required for the dark tango of heartbreak, one of whom is you. Were you naive? Were you too unguarded? Were you careless? In what ways did you set yourself up for this? Were there warning signs you ignored? This is not, I stress, to commit the age-old churlishness of blaming the victim, but merely to learn why we have become a victim. Because unless you were a child at the time of the injury, you must bear the responsibility of protecting yourself, yet still remaining open to others. Forgiving yourself for your part in it may make you better able to move toward genuine forgiveness toward the one who hurt you. But first, you have to forgive yourself. Third, pray for the heartbreaker. Whether or not you believe in a God or pray, you can still undertake a deliberate practice of wishing them well. This, it seems to me, is where the Buddhist practice of metta fits in as part of this toolkit rather than the entire solution. In metta, you begin easily by thinking of someone you love and wishing them health and happiness. And when that becomes easy, you then move on to someone you don't know well, a stranger, a face in the street, and practice wishing them health and happiness. And then, of course, the hard part. You move on to someone who's actually injured you and wishing them health and happiness. That may be the hardest part, the bending of your own emotional reflexes toward understanding and compassion. And it's much more than cheek-turning passivity. It's more like seeing that the blow you felt came from, must have come from, a place in the other that knew no other way to express itself. What may help in this effort is a searching and fearless moral inventory of all the times you yourself have injured the heart of another, which was the hard lesson of my own personal story. If you would have others understand your motives, and who wouldn't, it follows that you must understand the motives of those who hurt you. How else can forgiveness come? Fourth, if it's appropriate, and only if, undertake to do acts of kindness toward the heartbreaker. Again, this is not to change them, but to change you. Their responses are irrelevant. There is a kind of wonderful biofeedback in us that assures that we become what we do, that outward gestures can create corresponding interstates of feeling. So if you do kind gestures, you begin to feel kindness. Fifth, let go of the desire to see the heartbreaker acknowledge guilt, responsibility, or even awareness of the hurt they caused. With the best will in the world, you will probably never be able to engineer this. How often we fantasize, though, about a scene in which the one who hurt you wakes up to themselves, gasps in a remorse of conscience, and abjectly begs your forgiveness. Understand, this control fantasy will probably never happen, satisfying though it might be to imagine. How do I know? Because when was the last time you did anything like this? Trying to improve another person is folly. And finally, be patient and steadfast. Because forgiveness, the only effective process of mending the heart, is not for sissies. It may require years and never feel complete. 70 times 7, an infinity of patience. It's taken me decades since 1990, and while I feel much better, it still doesn't feel finished quite. Nevertheless, what's the alternative? The resentments only boomerang back to us, and only we are responsible for our own happiness. So what heartbreak do you hold on to? Who are you resentful of, bitter toward now? You can let it go. All of those 6 tools require is willingness. You got to want it. And if you don't want to let go of the ache, who can you really blame for your pain? In my most hopeful and free moments, I imagine a kind of dream life where all of the people who hurt me and whom I have hurt in my life are able to come together at a great table of warmth and fellowship, shriven, forgiven, and forgiving, and remaining a part of each other's lives forever. Lives we were, after all, once so deeply interpenetrated with, and whose sudden wrenching absence feels like a missing limb. That's a dream of heaven, I know. And pity it is that the 2 women I spoke of at the beginning of this talk will almost certainly never read this or listen to this podcast. Such is the alienation and incomplete relationship that comes from heartbreak and heartbreaking. The opportunity to free each other from heartbreak lost forever. Forgiveness isn't easy, just completely necessary if we're to evolve our natures and make a world worth living in. Not one awash with wounded and vengeful souls in an unending cycle of pain and blame and resentment. Hurt people, hurt people. How we each can break that cycle in our lives, or at least stop it rolling along and along. Forgiveness. Forgiveness is love's hardest work and love's greatest risk, and it is human nature's only hope. Because it is hard, because it is necessary, forgiveness is not a sign of weakness, but of moral strength. A determination not to let our bestial natures call all the shots and determine our happiness and our future. But if Kathleen and Alex ever happen to listen to this, I'd want them to hear this. To Alex, the wife who broke my heart and left me literally holding a baby, I'd say, I forgive you. You owe me nothing. In fact, raising our little girl on my own was a gift. It might just have saved my soul. To Kathleen, who might hurt, I want to say, please forgive me. I knew not what I did. I really do now. I learned it the hard way. And just saying that here to you, I do feel better already. Admonitions to forgive abound in religious literature. And if a man can say the Lord's Prayer over the body of his murdered son, as in the Helen Prejean story of Dead Man Walking, there is hope for all of us, and real freedom beckons. How sad, in a way, that Unitarians have thrown the baby of that religious wisdom of the Lord's Prayer out with the bathwater of religious dogma. Forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. What mighty, miraculous, and mending words to pray.
Well, we hope you enjoyed this Expanding Horizons podcast. These podcasts are the intellectual property of the presenter. They can be used only with the express permission and appropriate acknowledgement of the presenter and the podcast used in its entirety. This permission can be obtained by emailing UnitarianSA@bigpond.com. Please feel free to leave a comment or visit us on Facebook or Twitter by searching SA Unitarians.